Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Samarpan Avikal. Avikal is a mystic, author of three books, and internationally renowned teacher. Avikal is the founder and director of the Integral Being Institute and has over 35 years of experience in Zen and Advaita. Avikal has developed an original and innovative approach to the work of the inner judge and facilitates groups and retreats around the world. Hello, Avikal. Welcome to the Love Osho podcast. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. And thank you for having me here.
It's my pleasure.
Really nice.
Amazing. So I'm so excited to be talking to you today. You spent a long time with Osho in the commune. You worked as a commune photographer. You even took some photo shooting for Osho and you worked as a guard. So you covered many, many different jobs and you were also...
You cook too, my friend.
Oh, you cook too. That I didn't know. And you were the director of the Osho Zen Martial Arts Schools. So there is plenty to discuss, lots of things to cover, and I can't wait to deep dive. But to start, I'd love to hear how you came to know about Osho in the first place.
Okay, so 1976, Florence, I am coming out of a very long period, about 10 years of political militancy. I was a leftist, a revolutionary, and few months before, I think it was around May or something like that, it became clear that our project was not going to happen, was not going to be a revolution in Italy. So we dissolved our organization and I found myself, I didn't know who I was anymore. It's as simple as that. As soon as my idea, my projects, my desire, my passion about transforming life and myself with it fell apart, I went into a big hole. So one afternoon I was in a bookstore in Florence, Feltrinelli, and I was looking at different books. And at some point I just opened this book, Tantra the Supreme Understanding, that I realized after it had just been published. So I started reading a little bit and I found it fascinating. So I took it home. And I started reading Osho. And as it happened to many people, because then I spoke with friends and other sannyasin, every single word was both as a drop of honey that was making my heart just feel so nurtured. And in the same time, it was like, was like a lightning bolt, something that was shaking myself completely and saying, wait a minute, what are you doing with your life? Where are you going to go? So I kept reading and I started also trying a little bit, you know, do it by myself, some breathing techniques and a little bit of sitting. And I realized also that there was a part of me that had been longing and thirsty for this kind of understanding for a very, very long time. I mean, I remember probably since I was a very young kid. So that was my first actual meeting with Osho. And yet, at the same time, I felt I wasn't really ready to meet him or to become a disciple. I had a lot of stuff happening. You know, I was very interested in Carlos Castaneda and magic and anthropology. So I started the whole period of my life. I went away from Italy. I left Italy, went to Mexico. I worked as an anthropologist. I met shamans. I worked with magic. I worked with different things. And then finally, in 1983, I was back in Italy. And finally, the bolt really arrived. And I realized that I needed to go to the ranch. And so I got myself a ticket and I went to Rajneeshpuram in America. And the 23rd of October, 83, I took sannyas. And that's where my journey started. And that's where actually where I felt I met Osho in his body for the first time. Now, the meeting with Osho was was quite fantastic. You know, I was standing on the road and outside of the university, and at some point, I was really in a place of wanting to meet him and also resisting the meeting. I was afraid, actually. I was afraid and I was also excited, both. So at some point I was standing there and Osho drove with his car and at some point when he was about 10 or 15 meters from where I was standing, I felt like something hit me straight in my chest and I fell back on the floor, on the ground. And I started laughing and laughing and laughing. And that was it. And that was it. In that moment, I decided, okay, this is it. You know, I'm going to take sannyas. And then the whole journey with Osho started.
Wonderful. It's a long, long journey because I understand that since that point, then you basically never left or you got involved in the commune life in many different ways, as we mentioned before. And I think one of the most interesting part of your job is that you were the photographer of the commune and you also took some private shootings for Osho. So of course I want to hear about that, but before coming to the private shooting with Osho, I'm also curious to know what being a photographer of the commune means. For example, you know, what were the instructions, you know, where you just said to say, you know, just go around, take some pictures. Was there an idea, plan behind having a man going around taking pictures of the commune?
Both. If the commune, or when the commune had some specific project, and they we often had specific projects for books or for magazines or to give to other newspapers, or just to take pictures and then to put in the shop, you know, we were like 3-4 photographers at that time. We were asked to actually do something specific, you know, like for example, I remember when they were building the waterfall out in Lao Tzu. No, we took pictures of the whole progress of the waterfalls while it was made, you know, with the workers and then all around it, the garden and so on. This was one part. Another part was that I was free, basically, whenever I felt like, not to just go around and take pictures of the commune, and pretty much whenever I wanted. I mean, the only thing that was very clear and very strict was that all the pictures and all the photos were property of the commune. So whenever I would take pictures, I would process them and work them and or bring out to get processed and then give it to the community. And then the commune would decide what to do with them. The other job was to take pictures during discourse. And we had a rotation. So usually, depending on the season and how many photographers were available, there was a rotation pretty much every 3 or 4 days during the high season or 5 days. And during monsoon, pretty much every other night, I was sitting there and taking pictures in discourse. And then I also had different jobs because together with my girlfriend at the time, we got a couple of very beautiful projects to actually create. One is a book about the commune, which I think was published probably in 90 or after Osho left the body, possibly 92, I don't remember. And another one in 89, which was a magazine, which was called Osho Rajneesh. Yeah, and that was fantastic.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. And of course, I have some copies of the old books, original books published, the first editions. And there are so many beautiful pictures in there. And it's amazing. It's so sad that the latest, most modern editions, they removed pictures of the commune because those pictures speak many words.
I know.
I'm sure, yeah, you're also sad about that. Now, let's talk about the photo shootings and photo sessions with Osho, because there are so many pictures of Osho, and some of them are iconic. And I understand from what I heard that Osho was very peculiar about pictures. He wanted the photos in the first place, and he wanted them done in a certain way at a certain time, dressed in a specific outfit. So he was a bit of the director of the whole operations. Is that so? And how can you describe?
Yes and no. So let me describe then the first session I had with him. So at that time was like, I think it was October 88. I came back to Pune too, and from where I was living. I was living on the Amalfi Coast. And on the Amalfi Coast, I had just finished to publish a book on the Amalfi Coast, a photo book on the Amalfi Coast. So I brought it to Osho, and I gave it to Neelam, which was his Indian secretary, together with another picture, which was a picture of a drop on a leaf that I took in the garden, in my garden. So after 3 days, Neelam called me and said, Avikal, Osho has kept the picture of your drop on his bedtime table for the last 3 days. And he sends this message. He says, he wants you to take a picture of a drop exactly in the moment that it starts falling. And I went into my whole idea, how am I going to do that, you know, and this and that and that. So anyway, it became clear that technically I could not do it because the finger is not fast enough to pick up the... So the only way was with a laser beam in India in 88, forget it. So I decided to... I was a guard in his garden at that time. So I took the shift, the night shift, from midnight to 6 o'clock in the morning, so that I could sit in his garden when all these drops would fall, you know, early in the morning. And I kept watching and watching and watching and watching. And then one day I just saw it. You know, I just saw it exactly what happens between the drop and the leaf just 1 second before the drop starts falling. And what I saw is that the drop and the leaf are in a merged state, like two lovers. And before separation, they start trembling, and then they separate. So at that point, I saw the trembling, and it was very easy. The moment that the trembling would start, I would just click, and I got the drop just in the moment this starts falling. So I developed it. I brought it to Osho. I mean, to Neelam. Neelam brought it to Osho. The next day, she calls me in and says, Avi, Osho said that he would like you to take pictures of him. And I was like, oh my God, no, what an amazing gift. So I simply waited. I simply waited. And then I don't remember who, but that basically they came and told me, look, Osho wants pictures taken with a sweater, a high neck sweater, a black high neck sweater, which we are finishing, you know, and making. Yeah. So you're going to have to wait that we finish it. And then when it's ready, we call you. Say, good, sure. So then I get called about 5 days later. And they say, I was sitting in Lao Tzu in the, at the gate guarding. And I think Anando came to me and said, Avikal, today at 4 o'clock, you come here and we go and take pictures of Osho. I said, sure. And I started trembling. I was like, okay. So I get through my whole shakiness and expectation and excitement. And oh my God, I'm going to be with the master and all that. And at 4 o'clock, I go to the gate. Anando comes and says, sorry, it's been canceled. And this goes on for 6 times, which I find that, you know, such a, an amazing master-disciple you know, thing. So at some point, I was so relaxed. Because they would tell me, okay, come. I say, yeah, sure, I come. You know, so the 7th time I arrived there, and they come and pick me up, and they take me by the hand and say, okay, let's go. And I'm like, okay, I'm ready. So they take me to the room that now is his samadhi, and at that time was still just a meditation room. So I go there. And they say, and Anando says, wait here, I'll go and get Osho, and then we do the session. So I'm waiting, and as I'm waiting, I just decide that I need to sit on the floor and sit, and I just visualize myself as the drop falling into the ocean. And something really started kind of melting inside and relaxing. And I have my eyes closed, and after a while, I hear the voice, hello. And it was Osho standing there, like, so I opened my eyes, yeah. And then Anando says, are you ready? I said, yes, I'm ready. And I started taking pictures of Osho. And he was wearing this turtleneck, black turtleneck. And he was just available. He didn't have his hat because it was in that situation. So I asked him to move closer to the window. We checked the light. And then sometime would say, would you, and Osho would say, this way. I said, like, can you move a little bit? You know, was very easy, very simple, and very ordinary. You know, like absolutely a normal, yeah? nothing strange or extraordinary. It was just simple and beautiful. And I took some pictures that have become some classics, you know, like the one with the turtleneck or the one on the side. And then there is a beautiful one, which is quite famous, of him seeing from one side, all black in the background with a long white beard. And that I didn't take it myself personally. I prepared the camera, and because it was taken in front in his personal room. So I prepared the camera so that Anando could go there and just click. You know, and just tell him, you know, to stand here. So that was, and that has become one of the classics, you know. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then that was the first one. And then a few more sessions came later on.
So you had a few photo sessions with Osho, and clearly you spent some intimate time in close physical proximity, and you had to interact with Osho. You were doing a job, but as we all know, Osho was always working with disciples. Yes. At any opportunity. So have you noticed anything about Osho that was unusual about this man in this kind of situation that is not the normal Osho on the podium talking and giving discourses?
Well, the thing that I was clear, it was not unusual, what was his ordinariness. You know, the simplicity, immediacy, spontaneity of the moment, first of all. In the I think it was the second, no, the third or the fourth session I did with him, which is the session where he was playing some instruments. We had set up all these instruments on the floor, you know, and he was sitting on a cushion. And Osho had no idea how to play an instrument. He had never played an instrument in his life, as far as I know. So at some point, he took some bells and he started kind of making some sounds. And there was no harmony. There was no particular thing. So I was just looking at him. And then at some point, something completely changed. And he became a shaman. He started making sounds. And obviously, he was so present that every sound started becoming like magic. And I was completely hypnotized, mesmerized. So he had to tell me, Avikal, can you take some pictures? Because I was completely, no, the sounds were the sounds of presence. So there was no question of knowing how to use an instrument. Presence was being played through the instruments. And that was amazing. I was just like, so in that sense, I saw something in him that I know, because I spoke with all the Indian disciples, I know that they experienced that in the very beginning of Osho, the magician. Now, the magician. And also having had an experience of some work with the shamans in Mexico, I could see that incredible attunement with, in this case, with the sounds, and how you can use the sound to create reality. So that was actually a fantastic moment, absolutely fantastic.
Yes, what a special moment you had the opportunity to witness. Amazing. And I think I have a picture in my mind of that photo shooting. I think he was wearing a red dress, if I'm
kind of a sienna color, a dark brown, reddish brown. Yes.
Okay, so that's the one. Yeah, got it. Yeah. Amazing. Yes. Okay, cool.
Yes.
Oh, well, this is fantastic, you know, to have the opportunity to spend time with Osho, take the pictures. So is there anything else you want to add before we move on and talk about your work and profession?
What I want to add is that that message that Osho sent me, I want you to take a picture of the drop the moment it starts falling, became my first koan, became actually that paradoxical question. And then out of that, actually, I was already interested in the Satori work, in the awareness intensive work, in working with koans. So somehow everything started fitting. You know, for me, also my first name is Samarpan, which means surrender. So the thing of dropping the drop, you know, so many things started kind of falling in place, you know, with each other. You know? So I can see a whole movement that started happening in my consciousness about my own development, my own understanding, my own growth, my own capacity to embody the truth, you know. And so, yeah.
Perfect. You know, it's like he kind of laid down the foundation for your path, for your spiritual path.
Absolutely. Not only the foundation, but giving me also exactly certain pointers that I could take and then start kind of moving with them. You know, and that was an amazing gift.
Yes, and it's so poetic at the same time, and so very zen in this case. You know, it's like
definitely, definitely, yes.
Beautiful, beautiful.
So, talking about your work, moving to your profession and more closer to your current days, I understand that you are the founder of the Integral Being Institute.
Yes.
So, first of all, I'd love to hear what you offer as part of the Institute. And then, I'd like to know a little bit more about specific innovations that you brought into the self-development world.
Well, I don't know if you have, I assume that you have seen my website and that you have seen that the symbol of the Institute has, you know, a circle, a square, a triangle, and a spiral. Now, I just take the triangle as in this moment, I want to talk about that because that's the foundation of the approach of the Institute. The approach of the Institute is about three different dimensions of the real. One is the personality, you know, so the dimension which is based on limitation, on conditioning, on survival, and on control. Then there is the dimension of the absolute, which is all there is. You know, with beyond definition, beyond time and space, beyond polarity, beyond distinction. And then there is the bridge between the two, which is what we call the essential domain, the qualities of being. So how the absolute manifests in each individual in a completely unique way through universal qualities. And these are the three points of the triangle. And so the work that we offer and that we keep creating, you know, and is basically how we integrate the experience and the understanding of the personality as a survival mechanism, taking away completely any kind of rejection, any kind of resistance, any kind of condemnation, but simply taking it for what it is, a survival structure. And at the same time, our existing as unique manifestations of the absolute, you can call it of God or primary awareness, doesn't matter the name we give, and how we can embody, you know, both on a day-to-day experience and life through essential qualities. So this is, so the work is about integrating everything in the recognition that you, me, everybody, we are already complete. We are already everything. We don't need to add or take away anything. We just simply need to be willing to explore, manifest, share, recognize all this immense richness. So this is what I came to about, I think it was about 15 years ago, something like that. And I created this institute.
That sounds very kind of deep type of work. And I'm wondering, you were involved with photography, you were passionate and interested in martial arts, you were also teaching, we didn't cover that aspect, and you were a cook, you know, you did many, many things in the commune. How did you then decide to get into this type of work, which, you know, kind of bridging meditation and therapy, and start working with people and creating a whole institute? You know, that's a jump.
Okay. From the point of view of photography, it was very easy in the sense that after taking pictures of Osho, I realized that I could not take pictures of anything else anymore. So I just stopped. I just completely finished my life as a photographer. Done. From the other point of view, what is the love of the truth? My love of the truth has been something that I have felt since I was very young. And in the beginning, I started putting myself into the experience of the truth by recognizing a need, which was my personal need, which was a need of centering and grounding. I needed to feel that I was belonging to this planet, and I was belonging to this universe, and I was ready to actually be alive and be an embodiment of this aliveness. So I dedicated my life to martial arts because it felt that was, it was my path. That's all. You know, I can't really explain it rationally. And at some point I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And this, and I started doing it, and I started practicing, and I did it for, I don't know, 30, 40 years. And I was lucky enough because in the commune, there was also a need for the guards to have some sort of training in case there were like problems, which sometimes happened, you know. And then Osho gave me this this responsibility to be the director of the Zen School of Martial Arts. So that supported my journey on a very practical level. And I was training every day for I don't know how many years, and it was beautiful. And at the same time, the koans arrived in my life. So it's not only the question of the training in martial arts and the centering and grounding, but also understanding how can I explore the fundamental question, who am I? And so then this thing started falling in place, and then came the work with the school, and in the school there was the awareness intensive was part of our school. So then I found, I participated to my first Huizin, I got trained, then I participated to Satori, I got trained from Ganga, and then I became her co-leader. And we started offering Satori together, and I did also with Anando, German Anando in Cologne and in other places. So one thing after the other, you know, I started evolving, you know, like in a domino effect, you know. And then I came to actually what became, I would say, my most original specialty, which is dealing with the inner judge. In 95 or something like that, 96, I was studying also with a teacher, which is called Faisal Mukaddam, and he is one of the founder of the Essence Work, together with Almas. And I just realized that even though there is a lot of work around how we deal with our inner judge, the superego, in many different aspects, there wasn't one work that would deal directly with it. It was like little crumbs here and there, you know, in the Fresh Beginnings, in Primal, in the Artificial Hoffman, and things like this, you know, in therapy. But there was nothing that would look directly. What is this, you know? Why we have this constant pressure inside of this judge, you know, and prejudices and admonishment and guilt and shame? So I decided to get into that, you know, and to really develop specific pieces of work that would approach immediately and directly this question of control to survive, obviously, you know. So that was one big direction of the work, and the other one was self-inquiry. And self-inquiry is an amazing methodology, you know, which, you know, it's, in my view, is one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful methodology that exists, because it puts together love and awareness, the love of the truth and the awareness of this moment. You know, that's what inquiry is about, being present and loving the truth at any price, any cost, whatever that is. So these have been foundational for all the work that I have done and I keep doing.
Wonderful. And I'm sure that you combine all of this into the institute. So you do you have different offerings. You know, you do the Satori, the awareness intensive, and then this very unique way of dealing with the inner judge, which of course is a very common issue that we all have.
You know, this, yes, the way, we do.
I'm sure it's very valuable, the work you do.
See, the interesting part is also that the inner judge exists in every culture. It doesn't matter if I am a Sicilian, like I am a Chinese or an American or whatever. You know, every culture has a control system based on this inner structure of control. So it's very interesting to see how it articulates in different countries, religions, ages, you know.
Yes, absolutely. Now, that's fascinating observation. You know, we always talk about, you know, how many differences we have, cultural differences. Now, this is the contemporary way of talking about people and differentiating people is a cultural difference. But when yes. It comes to some fundamental things, we are very, very similar.
Absolutely.
When it comes to the inner judge. Cool. Okay. So we kind of heading towards the end, and I have three final questions. Before that, is there anything else you want to add? Any latest projects? Of course, now with COVID, we all know things are a little bit on hold, but sounds like your work is doing very well. You're flourishing. Lots of projects. What's the latest?
Okay. The latest appeared about a week ago. Even though it's been brewing for some time. And I'm going to put all my energy into this fundamental topic, freedom to be, freedom to do. What are we talking about? What are we talking about when we talk about freedom to be? And what are we talking about when we talk about freedom to do? What are the differences? How can we understand how they live together? How can we integrate them? How can we stop dividing them? No. How can we see that the freedom to be has to do with being, and of course the freedom to do has to do with becoming, and that there is actually no intrinsic conflict between these two aspects of reality, except what we create and what the judge helps to create, you know? So this is what I really I'm looking really forward to, really, also because it's now that so many people are in pain because they feel that they cannot do what they want to do. There is a lot of limitations, and a lot of people get so reactive about this supposed lack of freedom that they forget that they can be and that they always are anyway. So it's how can we find a way to take away all these walls that we create, you know, between becoming and being. And so this is the project for the whatever it's going to take. I don't know how long it's going to take. Probably a long time, or maybe not.
Fascinating. So basically, you took the opportunity to kind of feel what's happening now in the world, and you pick the vibe that people are struggling with this issue, and you're coming up with a solution. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and also not only people. I've been struggling myself, you know, in this year. So what I pick up is something that obviously resonates with something that is real for me too, you know, like, you know, what does it mean to be free to do, you know, am I a doer? Can I define myself through my doing, or am I more than that? So there is a lot of stuff that can be inquired upon and approached and opened up. And I'm a curious guy. It's like, I'm just curious, you know. So yeah. I want to look, I want to see, I want to feel what's going on.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's the spirit, I think. You know, the idea of always relating to ourselves, to reality, and keep looking, keep searching, yes. You know, keep exploring, yes. And being curious.
Yes. You know, that's yes. Beautiful. You know, the interesting thing, if I can add one thing, is that the way I approach all this is finding, not searching. See, the searching mind somehow is not in me anymore. I left it long time ago. Now, the way I relate to the moment is by finding. I find and I keep finding and finding and finding and finding and finding, but the tension of the search is not there anymore. And that makes the finding so much easier and rich and friendly. Because the search is narrow. The search tends to go in a particular direction. I don't go in any direction. I just open the field and I start allowing whatever is there to be revealed. And then I take it, you know, sometimes it's too much, sometimes it's overwhelming, but you know, that's what I'm here for, you know. And that has been a big step in my life, the moment that the searcher has dropped and I realized actually I'm finding all the time. Just as I'm present, presence is a continuous well of beingness, becoming, you know, like I can reject it or I can be present with it. And I chose to be present.
Wow, that's very powerful. It definitely shows that, you know, you have matured in your journey as a meditator, for sure.
I think, well, yes. Yeah, and you know, Osho is here for me. Osho is here for me all the time. You know, Osho is here and has never left. So I'm definitely not lacking support. Yes.
Okay. So you almost hinted to the last questions I have, but I have three to shoot to end this beautiful interview. So the first one is, what is, in your view, Osho's greatest contribution to the world?
Well, I remember Osho saying in a discourse, the only difference between you and me is that you are still trying to be perfect. And I dropped it long time ago. Is this complete yes to everything that is? It's such an amazing love for what is, you know, that for me, that's what really blows everything. Blows concepts, ideas, techniques, you know, like, yes, we need them. We need the techniques, we need them. But the fundamental thing is that we are already complete. Each manifestation of being is absolutely already luminous, you know, manifestation of the divine. So, and that's for me is like, yeah, what else? There is nothing else to add to that, you know?
Okay. So the second question is, what is the most beautiful gift you received from Osho?
Surrender. I was invited to surrender. Was I invited actually to recognize something that was already present in me, which I could taste in some moments, I could sense in some moments, and scare the shit out of me. So I was invited to surrender. And I felt held. I felt held by my hand, you know, by Osho, you know. And so, yeah, it's been difficult in some moments, but not so much, actually. So, yes, surrender. For me, surrender is also the door into one of my best qualities, which I think is innocence. So surrender and innocence, yes.
Okay, so the last question, you hinted a little bit before, but let me ask it. What does it mean to you to be with Osho today?
See, this question of meaning, it's a strange question, because being with Osho for me is beyond any meaning. It's not something that I can put into any particular meaning. It's so vast and it's so unpredictable and it's so generous that the word meaning is like, it doesn't make any sense for me. Yeah? Meaning has disappeared at some point. And Osho is just everything. You know, and what else can I add, you know? So no meaning, beyond meaning. beyond time, beyond space.
I love it. Okay, Vikal, look, it's been really, really exciting. You know, I feel re-energized after this hour spent in your company discussing your story with Osho. I really feel your energy, your innocence, your excitement for life. You know, you obviously are no more in your 20s, but I feel your spirit is very young. You're still up for it. You want to do stuff. You're very energetic. Yeah. You definitely have a lot of wisdom to share, I can tell you that. So, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed connecting with you, getting to know you a little bit and collecting your testimony and your beautiful story about taking the pictures for Osho. So thank you so much for being part of the Love Osho podcast.
Thank you, my friend. And thank you very much for taking the time and giving me the possibility to share myself and to share my love for this amazing human being that is Osho.
Absolutely. Okay, Vikal, I send you lots of love and a big
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.